It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome to the Nick Bob Podcast, live from the AOI Studios, a.k.a. my basement office. You know what is awesome? The chair I'm sitting in that the good folks at AOI hooked me up with, and it's the Aeron chair from Herman Miller. I absolutely love this chair. I can record long podcasts. I can get a lot of work done. I can watch film for hours and feel comfortable the entire time. This chair is mastered with the latest research around the science of sitting, advancements in materials, manufacturing, and technology. If you're looking for a new chair, highly recommend the Aeron from Herman Miller. Check out AOI on the web, aoicorp.com. That's aoicorp.com, or give them a ring, 402-896-5520, 896-5520. Reminder, subscribe to the podcast. Just click that subscribe button. That way, boom, every new episode of the Nick Bob Podcast shows up on your phone. You just got to click it, and it's playing. I appreciate it. It helps me out. It helps you out. And while you're at it, leave a five-star rating and review. All righty. I am really fired up about this podcast today. This is a pod that I've been sitting on for months. So I launched the podcast back in August, August 26th, I think it was the first day of the podcast. And you know, you record a bunch of different things, and one of the things that was going on during the week I was launching it was Doug McDermott was getting inducted into the Creighton Hall of Fame. And I was like, I text Doug. I was like, Doug, you got a few minutes from starting this podcast. Can you come on the pod and we'll just go down memory lane about your Creighton career? He's like, absolutely. I got you. I'm running around doing some different things, but I can give you a call. I said, great. So I was able to catch up with Dougie McBuckets, Doug McDermott, for about 45 minutes or so and over the phone. And we went through his entire Creighton career. It was unbelievable. But so, you know, I record that pod. And then, you know, we have everything set up for the launch of the podcast that week. You know, we got Rob Stone, Barrett Rood, Kevin Kugler, Schick, all this stuff. And then the pod gets launched and it's football season, right? So we're doing recap pods with me and Bo Rood. And, you know, I'm having Eric Crouch on the pod and Jason Peter on the pod. And it just, I couldn't find the right place to play the Doug interview. And what I wanted to find a spot where it was going to get the love and recognition it deserved. But I also wanted to make sure that, you know, I was staying topical with Nebraska football and football season. So it's kind of been, you know, and this might be too much information, guys, but like I've just been sitting here with this Doug McDermott interview and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out when I want to run it. And the reality is in the middle of basketball season, when everybody's got hoops on the brain, especially Creighton basketball on the brain, this is a perfect time to run it. It's the perfect time to run it because hoops on the brain and I'm super busy traveling around doing some stuff for college basketball. So I'm just, you know, I'm in an airplane, in a hotel, calling games. And I was like, this is just perfect. So what we decided to do was break this interview up into two parts. And there's tons of good stuff in here. Jays fans, you guys had a front row seat at this dude's career. And you want to know what every little thing was like when Coach McDermott took the job, deciding to come to Creighton, what it was like freshman, sophomore year, then decision to come back his senior year, like tons of amazing stuff with Doug McDermott. This was just a pleasure. This was a treat. This guy is a special dude. He's the greatest basketball player to ever play at Creighton. He's got one of the most decorated careers in the history of college basketball, 3,000 point scorer, three-time All-American, National Player of the Year. Just one of the more amazing stories you'll see in college basketball. And it was an absolute pleasure to sit courtside for pretty much all 3,000 points. I was the Creighton radio analyst during that time. And so I was able to get to know Doug off the floor, watch him on the floor, and it was amazing, man. It was absolutely amazing. So that's the plan for this pod, is to run part one of my Doug McDermott interview. We'll run part two coming up in a few days after. But without further ado, let's get to it. I'm so excited to finally share this with you guys. Here is my podcast conversation with the all-time leading scorer in the history of Creighton basketball, current member of the Indiana Pacers, Doug McDermott.
Brother of Nick McDermott, brother of Sidney McDermott, son of Greg McDermott, and friend of Nick Baugh, Dougie McBuckets. Doug McDermott joins us. Dougie, what's up, man? How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. That was a great introduction. it's great to be back in Omaha. You know, it's always a good memories coming back here. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to just being around all these people I shared a lot of good memories with.
Yeah. So you're going into the Creighton Hall of Fame. You and Anthony Tolliver are in the same class. I got inducted into my high school Hall of Fame this past winter, and it made me feel really old. Like as sad as it sounds, like I was like, I just feel really old. I can't believe it's been 5 years.
Yeah. You know, I was like, dang, I'm not that old. I'm not as old as Anthony Tolliver.
Right.
It's cool that we're doing it both together. And, you know, I think it'll bring, you know, guys from, you know, my team and guys from, you know, AT's team, that it'll be good to have just an alumni type weekend. So, but it definitely started to make me feel old when I see, you know, my sister in college and Jeff Vanderloo's daughter in college. You know, it's just, time flies, and it's already been, you know, I'm going into my sixth year, so it goes by so fast.
Well, how about, you know what really makes me feel old? And you, I mean, this would probably make you feel old too, is, I mean, Tucker DeVries, D-Rock's son, is getting like Division I basketball offers. That makes, I don't know what it is about Tucker, just that makes me feel really old.
It's absurd. You know, I was actually in Iowa this past week, and I played golf with D-Rock and Tucker. And Tucker's like 6'6", and he's, you know, talking, you know, he used to be such a quiet little kid.
I know.
You know, all grown up, and we're talking about, you know, playing for our dads together. It's really weird.
It is weird.
It feels like yesterday.
I was trying to think about this. Who is the last guy that you played with? Like, when were they done? Was it Zierden? Because I remember that being kind of a big deal when the guys that you played with were officially done.
For sure. Yeah, I think it was Zierden. I think it really, yeah, it was Zierden, or like that Zach Hansen class.
Yep.
Somewhat one of those classes. And I just, it's just so weird, you know, coming back now, you know, I come to the locker room and, you know, I think it'll get really weird when it's guys that, when I was in college, like Mitch Balk was coming in as like an eighth grader. So we were recruiting him when I was still on the
team.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a
connection. Once that phase is over, it's going to be really weird. I feel like I've known Mitch since then. In eighth grade. So once that class is out of here, that's when it's going to feel really weird.
How about real quick, before we get into a deep dive of your Creighton career, how about Coach Gibbs, head coach, Oklahoma City Thunder G League team? I'm not surprised at all. He always seemed like he was destined for the sidelines. What, I mean, pretty amazing though.
Pretty amazing. You know, I've, after being in OKC and being around Sam Presti a lot, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all. He's always felt very highly of Gibbs. And I think it goes back to the days where he was coming to, you know, scout. And, you know, he saw Grant as a coach, you know, on the floor. And I think he really did his homework on Grant. And, you know, he was spot on. And it's just so cool for Grant. You know, I know people there just love him. You know, he's done a really good job with their G League team as an assistant. And with that guy moving up, he was next in line. And I don't know if he saw it coming or not, but, you know, being 29 years old and having a head coaching job in the G League for probably one of the best organizations in the NBA, I think speaks volumes of, you know, what he's done in a short time.
All right, let's do the deep dive here, Dougie. I want to start in high school and work our way all the way through. So you had, it was three offers out of high school, right? It was Northern Iowa, Creighton, and Central Florida, correct?
Yep.
What do you,
what
were
crazy.
It's just nuts to say that out loud. What were the conversations like between you and your dad about him recruiting you and his decision to not offer you? Because I remember being in high school and like, you just want offers so bad. You're like, I don't get it, man. What, like, I'm killing these people. I got, why am I not getting offers? Did it kind of bug you, or did you guys have like a good understanding in that regard when he was at Iowa State?
We had a really good understanding. You know, I think, at the time him being at Iowa State, you know, there were a few programs that were like Big Ten, that were starting to call a little bit, but you know, I think it was John Beilein at Michigan and then, Carmody, at Northwestern. And, you know, I was like, dang, I want to go to the Big Ten so bad. I'd love to play at Northwestern. I just, I wanted to play at the highest level. But those guys never really pulled the trigger because they're like, if you're going to play, you know, in a Power Five, you're probably going to play for your dad. So, right. You know, we're not going to continue this. So that, and that kind of made me feel, it put a chip on my shoulder because, you know, I think, everyone kind of labeled me as a mid-major player. Yep. And, you know, I think I took that to heart and, you know, I really worked my tail off. You know, I was getting good mid-major looks with Creighton, UNI, Central Florida, and a few other Valley schools. And I kind of just said, okay, I'm just going to go to one of these schools and have a really good career. And, you know, things weren't going great at Iowa State with the team. And, you know, I think the end was kind of near and we kind of knew that. And I think my dad wanted to avoid that at all costs. So he's obviously really good friends with a lot of these Missouri Valley coaches. And, you know, we went on our visits and, you know, I really liked it down in Central Florida, but I think I was convinced maybe it was a little, you know, more of a vacation destination and not
play ball.
And, we went down there, me and my dad on the visit there. And I was like, I want to commit right now. Like I told him, like we're at the coach's house, I mean, the coach's spirit over at his house. And I told him like, yeah, I think I'm ready, man. Like, this is the spot. He's like, let's go back home and sleep on it a little bit. And, of course I go to Cedar Falls a week later and commit a couple weeks after that. So, it's pretty crazy looking back and, you know, those are good times, and you know, I'm glad I got to go through that recruiting process.
So when your dad takes the Creighton job, did you instantly think, oh, maybe I could follow him to Creighton, or did that not happen right away? Like, what was that like when he gets the Creighton job? Was it instant? Like, oh, I'm coming to Omaha with my dad.
It was honestly a collab. You know, decision, yeah. Family decision. You know, I think I remember it was like senior week in high school. So you just want to be with your friends, you know, like mm-hmm. You're not really, your finals are over and you kind of have like this week of just having fun. And, you know, I'm over at my buddy's house down the street and, you know, we're being high school kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, my dad calls me like at, you know, my curfew's not till 12:30. So I'm like, it's 9:30 or 10. He's like, hey, get home, we need to talk. I'm like, no, I'm staying home, I'm staying over here. And he's like, no, for real, we need to talk. So I go over there and, you know, just something, he's sitting in a part of the living room, like in our house, that I've never seen him sit in. I'm like, okay, and he's with some other guys, and I'm like, all right, something serious is going down. So he laid it down, he said, okay, well, here's the deal, Creighton has called me and, you know, they want to meet, you know, we want to meet in the next, you know, day or so. Would you be interested in following me if that were the case? And I was like, you know, as a son, I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Right away. Just hopped on it. And, you know, I think he slept on it. We talked again in the morning and he went and met with Rass. And I know that went really well. And,
right.
You know, from there, it's kind of history. I joined him, you know, it was such a quick decision. But, you know, I think we kind of maybe saw it coming towards the end of his Iowa State year that there's a chance he could, you know, go to a mid-major type program if things didn't go well. And, you know, that's what happened.
So there was no hesitation about, because not everybody wants to play for their dad. You know what I mean? Some people, when they go to college, a part of wanting to go to college is like, man, I want to get away from my parents. I want to, like, so was there, it sounds like you were like, hell yeah, I want to play for my dad.
Yeah, you know, I really didn't want to. I was saying it all year in my whole recruiting process. Like, I don't want to play for him at all. There's nothing personal.
Yeah.
I think it was more the situation. I wanted to go somewhere where I could kind of be my own person and not just a coach's kid. And, you know, being in Ames, I just kind of wanted to get out of that spotlight a little bit. And, we felt like playing for Jake was the perfect fit. You know, mm-hmm. he's pretty much like a second father to me at the time. You know, and that was a perfect situation. And, you know, I think once the Creighton deal came along, I'm like, okay, well, if I go to UNI, I'm going to have to play against my dad
yeah.
two or three times a year. That would just be awkward. And so it came down to just for the family. It was such a good move. You know, my sister was young. It's so easy to move everyone. And, you know, I think at the time, you know, I was recruited by D-Rock and those guys before, so I was familiar with Creighton. And, you know, I think it was just the perfect scenario and perfect job for him to get for me to be able to come on.
All right, let's get to – okay, so then you arrive freshman year. I don't know if you remember this. I got a call from D-Rock. I went and played 3-on-3 with – it was like you and maybe Josh Jones and Antoine. It was just – we didn't have enough to play 5, so we played 3-on-3. And I remember it was in the summer or fall before your freshman year, and you were just killing it. And I remember going down to D-Rock's office, and I remember going, D-Rock, you're going to redshirt Doug? Like, he's – I think this dude's like arguably the best player. And he was like, really? You think? I'm like, yeah, this guy is the real deal. Because people forget, like, the plan was to kind of redshirt you initially, but Kenny got hurt, and then that kind of like opened the door, or someone got hurt, right?
Yeah, it was, that goes back a ways. I do remember that now that you say that, the 3-on-3 game.
Yeah.
But I think it was Casey Harriman.
Casey,
so
that's
Casey
right.
Casey had the shoulder issues, and it was Casey and Ethan that were both kind of at the 4 spot. And, you know, Ethan had a really good freshman year, and like, he was probably going to be the starter, but he actually had a foot deal. He had the plantar fascia,
yep.
I believe, so he was dealing with a little bit too. So we were just kind of low on bodies, and they needed me, and I was playing well in the summer league. I was playing well in, you know, open gyms and stuff. I was still very thin, and they were trying to put weight on me, and you know, I took off in that Colorado scrimmage. We played Colorado in Denver, and we just didn't have enough bodies. And it's me and Kenny, and I think Gregory couldn't play because he had something weird. So me and Kenny played like the whole game, and I ended up just having a really good game against Andre Roberson, and we were both freshmen. And you know, I just took off from there, and you know, they had to play me because we just didn't have enough bodies.
So did you? But okay, so it takes off for you, and you have a really good freshman year. But when did the confidence really kick into overdrive? Because we're gonna get to your sophomore and junior year. Was it later in the? Was it one of those 2 years, or was the fuse lit early on in your freshman year of confidence? Like, man, I'm better than a lot of these guys.
Yeah, honestly, it started right away. You know, I went on a really good streak of, you know, double digits my freshman year, and I was like, dang, I think I can really do this.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, when you get to Missouri Valley play, you know, the coaching seems to be a little better, and the style of play that kind of grinded out a little more, and I was still being productive. And you know, it's just so long ago, I forget. I felt like I was confident. I scored a lot more on the block, I feel like, my freshman year.
Yeah.
And then sophomore, obviously, that's when I really, really took off. I think there was a game at Bradley my sophomore year. Or was that freshman year?
No, it was your sophomore. I looked it up this morning. You had you were 18 of 23 from the floor. You had 44 points. And I do remember, you know Kip Kissinger, the ref. I remember during the game, Kip – like, you scored, you had a crazy shot, and I was calling the game on the radio, and Kip took his whistle out and looked at me, and you know, you like that eyebrow look, like, look at this dude.
Yeah.
But that's, I remember that being, I thought you were really good, but that I remember that game being like, whoa, this guy isn't kind of good.
Yeah.
This is like another level.
That was the one, you know, and I'll never forget that trip because it was like that. Was it snowy there? Like,
yes.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
yes. I think we got snowed in.
No one really there. And like, I don't know. It had that vibe where we all clicking, and I just had a crazy game and like had my first like dunk. Like, it was just, I feel like I kind of just took off from there. And
yes.
That's definitely when it was like, okay, this is for real now.
Okay. I want to back up,
for a second, and we're talking about things exploding for you individually, but as a team, at the end of your freshman year, you guys play in the CBI, you go all the way to the finals, you lose to Oregon in what was a best of 2 of 3. I mean, felt like we were in Eugene, Oregon for like a year, like at the end of the year. Yeah. But remember during that tournament, you guys switched up your style of play. You started playing fast. You let Antoine Young push it. You guys were taking quick. It was pace. It was like how Creighton plays now. That had to have been a turning point for the team, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that for sure was, you know, cause I remember, you know, after our, you know, we were done, we a little disappointing to end the year in the Valley and whatnot. And I remember the coaching staff, you know, sitting down with us and like, all right, guys, like we're going to play in this CBI or yeah. CIP, yeah. Like, sponsored by Zebra Pen. you know, we were like, what? Like all the seniors were probably pretty down about it, like Caleb right. and those guys. But, you know, I think, we just didn't want to practice anymore. We didn't want to go up to that old gym floor and all that stuff. And our first practice, we get up there and it's like super fun. Like we're not doing any defensive stuff. We're just getting up and down. Like they're telling us to shoot every three we get. Like, you know, just we're like, okay, this is kind of fun. This is awesome. And then we did it at home against, I forgot which team. And we just kind of got on a roll there with that style of play. And it definitely set the tone for not our team's future, but kind of the culture of Creighton basketball. And I don't think, you know, people realize how important that stretch of CBI games was. And, that was some of the funnest basketball, I think, you know, all of us, you know, would say that we played.
So that's when the culture and the style got laid down. But I also vividly remember the San Diego State game on the road as being, to me, that felt like a huge turning point for your group in like being winners. You remember, I don't know, like your freshman year, you guys lost a million close games. It was one of those things like you would be in there and then something would happen in the final 4 minutes and you would lose. Like that happened all the time. But I vividly, that's another, moment that I remember walking to the bus in San Diego at San Diego State after you guys won that game. It was a tough game. Austin Chapman played great. Ethan played great and being like, this group feels like they got something going. Could you feel it too?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's another game I meant to say earlier. You know, I think I remember that trip too. I remember we had you in practicing against us the night before. You're like, okay, like you didn't know you're practicing and then threw you in there.
Yeah.
You know, one of the Xavier things.
Yes. The worst depiction of it was horrible.
Yeah. I remember that practice the night before. And, you know, I think me and Gibbs were actually talking about this. That game was huge because we were down like freaking 20 points in the first half or whatever it was. And we found a way to win. And as you said, the freshman deal, when we lost a lot of close games, I think having Gibbs really helped us.
No doubt.
You know, figure out how to win. Just having another guy out there that has experience and pretty much is a coach out there on the floor. He always had a calming influence, like in the huddles. And another game that was similar to San Diego State, weren't down as much, was at UAB, where we found a way to win in a pretty tough environment against a team that was really good. And those two, to me, were when we figure out how to win and not figure out, you know, ways to lose like we did our freshman year.
Because I think those two games then allowed you, remember, you have the unbelievable bracket buster win, Long Beach State. Antoine hits the shot. It was an unbelievable game. Then you win the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. It was all of a sudden, it was like it flipped to where you guys expected to win, and that little subtle shift changes things. What do you remember about that NCAA tournament? Beat Bama, and then, you know, you have the Harrison Barnes and connection of you and Ames and Ames High, and you got to play North Carolina in the second round in Greensboro, which that was basically a road game.
Right. Yeah, there were just so much storylines, and just felt like such a big distraction. You know, people were talking about that more than, you know, the game, and I just think it got caught up. You know, whenever you play a team and you know, basically there where they played their conference tournament. You know, it's tough. You know, it's really tough. And that Bama win was huge, obviously, the Jonesy shot.
Yep.
That was such a fun game, you know, just to kind of – I think that was my dad's first NCAA tournament win. And, you know, that was a very special feeling just getting him over that hump because, mm-hmm. you know, at UNI he had so many great teams and they lost so many close games, you know, to these really high-seeded teams. And it was just cool to be on that floor, you know, sharing that moment, winning that tournament game. And I'll never forget that. And playing against Harrison,
yep.
Pretty special, sharing the floor with him. And then eventually playing with him on the Mavericks. It's pretty cool. It's two guys, you know, from Ames, Iowa.
Okay, so now let's get to your junior year. And I guess I want to ask this question while we're kind of transitioning to the next year. Because I was going to ask this at the end of the interview, but I want to ask it now. Take me to the invisible moments where you're working and grinding in the summer. You're in the old gym by yourself. It's night. It's June. It's July. Like, what? Tell me what those moments look like. What did that look like? Because you don't become the player that you became and are without busting your ass behind the scenes. Give me some, like, what were some things and some moments that were behind the scenes working?
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with the old gym, man. I tried to make it a nightly routine where I'd go over there, and I'd always want to be alone. And, you know, if there's someone in there, I would probably wait till they're out of there. And just became just a routine, and I started going there in the mornings, too, before class. I remember, you know, people having to tell me to sometimes I'd get texts or emails like, hey, we got the ALC down here. We don't need to fall bouncing around all the time. So I'd have to come back later. Just so many memories like that, shooting on the gun and just thinking about, you know, my future and everything. And I think, you know, my biggest summer was after my freshman year, I got invited to that USA deal for the U19s. And, you know, I thought, you know, it'd be tough to make that team with all those guys. And I busted my ass that summer. I was at the gym every single day. I was staying at my parents' house, just really locking in. And, you know, just I put on a lot of weight that summer. And that was it for me. And I took off from there because I made the team. And I just saw how much the hard work was paying off. And, you know, from there on out, I was a gym rat. And, you know, me and Coach DeVries did a lot of stuff in the mornings, and, you know, I always thank him because he was a huge part of my development too. And, definitely a lot of good memories in that gym.
All right. That'll do it for part one of the podcast conversation I had with the man, the myth, the legend, Doug McDermott. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. That way, when we drop part two coming up, you will have it. Just click that subscribe button. That way, every new episode of the Nick Bond podcast downloads right to your phone. So coming up in a couple of days, we are going to drop part two of the Doug McDermott interview I had with him. I didn't lie to you guys. This is really good. And let me tell you, it just gets better. You're not going to miss part two of my conversation with Doug McDermott. That'll be coming up in a few days. Again, in the meantime, subscribe to the podcast. Give it a 5-star rating and review. I really appreciate each and every one of you listening to the pod. So we'll see you next time on the Nick Bond Podcast.
Production.